My name is Elle Pliskota. I'm a 17-year-old senior in high school, and welcome to Echoes of Strength, where we explore important issues that impact our lives and communities. Today, we're focusing on a deeply important and often stigmatized topic, domestic violence. I'm honored to introduce our guest, Martha Austin, who has bravely agreed to share her journey and insights with us. I've known Martha since I was a baby. Thank you for being here.
You're welcome. I'm happy to do it.
All right. To start, I'd like to ask you about your experience. Can you share what led you to recognize that you were in a situation of domestic violence?
It took a long time for me to realize that I was in a relationship with somebody that was abusing me, mm-hmm. not only physically, but emotionally and verbally too. Mm-hmm. Because I thought what everyone thinks is that, well, if I just changed what I did, mm-hmm. then he won't act like that. Mm-hmm. So it took actually quite a while. He and I met in college and were engaged within 6 months. And then we were engaged all through college. And the abuse actually did start in college. Mm-hmm. But again, I thought, I'll change and he'll fix, or he can change, or whatever it might be. It wasn't really until just before getting married that I realized it. Mm-hmm. But yet I went through with it because I didn't know how to stop that snowball.
Right, right. Thank you for sharing that, and it must have been incredibly challenging. What were some key turning points for you that helped you decide to seek help?
Well, I left him 3 times, but I went back twice. So the first time I left, we were married less than a year and we were living in Colorado and I just couldn't do it anymore. Mm-hmm. So I packed up the car and left him a note and drove back to Minnesota. Mm-hmm. But then 3 months later, he came searching for me. So, and declaring his love and it'll never happen again, and we'll go to therapy. And we did go to therapy, and it worked for a little while. Not very long, actually, only a few months.
Yeah.
What led me to get help the first time mm-hmm. was a night in November of 1993, and I had gotten his permission to go out to dinner with a girlfriend of mine, and we went to the Mall of America. And when I got back, he was crying and angry and claiming that I never went to have dinner with that friend, that friend had called looking for me. And I was like, you've got to be crazy. I was with her. We can call her. And he just didn't believe me. And that night was probably the worst. I was thrown against the walls. I was thrown on the floor. My head was banged against walls. My head was banged on the floor. He didn't hit because bruises would have somebody question. Mm-hmm. So it was a lot of throwing, twisting arms, pushing. A lot of pushing me into any counter, a bathroom counter, a kitchen counter, whatever it was, because it lined up perfectly with my lower back. That didn't happen that night, though. What happened that night was literally throwing me all around the living room. And then when he was done, I went down to the bedroom and was just going to change clothes and put on my pajamas. And I was stark naked, and he came in and started again, forced me to have sex, and then he got up and went into the bathroom, and I knew that that was my moment. And so my clothes are on the floor, I'm stark naked. I thought, where are my car keys and my purse? And they were on the counter right next to the door in our apartment. Mm-hmm. And I just grabbed my clothes, tiptoed past the bathroom to the counter, grabbed my purse and my keys, and ran out of my apartment, stark naked, to the car. I got to the car in time that I could lock the car doors, and then he was there, and I took off. And that's when I knew that I was in a relationship that was never going to change unless mm-hmm. I did something.
Mm-hmm. So was that the first time?
That was the second time I left.
Okay. Do you want to share how you ended it for good? Left for the third time?
So the second time I left, I went into a hotel under a different name because I didn't want him to find me. Mm-hmm. And about a week or so later, I found out I was pregnant. And that's where little Samantha came from. Mm-hmm. I actually went and moved into the hotel that I worked for. My boss said, why don't you come live here? Because mm-hmm. we can protect you. Plus, you can work when other people can't get here. And I did. It was only about 5 or 6 weeks. And then I told him I was pregnant. And if he wanted to have anything to do with her, he'd have to go to therapy, which he did. And we got back together. So jump forward the whole pregnancy. I mean, he didn't abuse me. He cheated on me, but didn't abuse me.
Jump. It's a form of abuse, I feel like.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and the verbal, I should say that. The physical abuse didn't happen. Mm. The verbal abuse continued, especially as I got bigger and bigger. Mm. Fat, you're ugly, nobody will ever want you. Like, that was a norm. But jump forward to Samantha's now about 14 months old. And mm-hmm. we were in Illinois, living in a home on one of the farms that his parents owned. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't feeling well, so I had gone to bed. Now, he required that I vacuumed every single night because the old house had ladybugs. So we'd wake up every morning, there'd be dead little ladybugs all over the living room. And because she was only 14 months old, he's like, you need to vacuum every single night. And I didn't vacuum that night because I didn't feel good. So he came home from work, dragged me out of bed, threw me around the living room. And the one time he pushed me so hard, I flew through the air and hit the wall and then landed on the couch. And Samantha said, Daddy, what are you doing? Stop hurting Mommy.
Wow.
And that's when I knew I had to leave for the last time. But it wasn't easy. So his mom only lived maybe 10 minutes, 15 minutes away. So a couple days later, I asked him to leave and he got pissed, picked up the computer chair and threw it at me. But, you know, computer chair is big. You can see it coming, you can duck, you can move. Mm-hmm. I didn't get hit by the computer chair. A day or two later, I said, I need you to leave. This is done.
Yeah.
We're separating. Now, in the meantime, we were going through therapy. We were going through intense counseling, of which he had convinced the counselor that it was all me and not him, right? Mm-hmm. He was very, very good at gaslighting.
Yeah.
The second time I said, which was a couple days later, you need to move out, that's when he picked up shoes and was just throwing them at me like they were bullets. So you can't always miss shoes.
Yeah.
The third time I called his mom and I said, you know this has been going on. We lived with her for a couple of months when we moved to Illinois. He abused me when I was in that house. And she made excuses for him left and right. And I said, you need to tell him to move out. I've already put his shit on the porch. You need to tell him to move out or I will be calling the police.
Yeah.
And she was always very concerned about their good name. His dad had worked in the police office station. And so she was always worried about their good name. But unfortunately, he passed away. And that's how I finally was able to get away from him, sort of. I will say that all hell broke loose after that.
Right. But at least you were out of there, right?
He was out of the house.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was no longer being physically abused.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really powerful to hear how you found the strength to make those changes.
I don't know how I did. To be honest, I don't know that I had a choice.
I think Samantha was a big impact.
Oh, huge.
Yeah.
Huge.
Yeah. Can you talk about the support systems that were available to you and how they played a role in your journey?
There wasn't a lot back then. I mean, it was early 90s.
Right, right.
And an abuse victim feels shame. They feel they were a cause. Mm-hmm. They feel that they can't tell people.
Right? Yeah.
And especially since there were no bruises and it never happened with witnesses, right? There wasn't a lot of support. I remember now when you go to the doctor, the nurse asks you as part of the, you know, like, let's check your blood pressure. Let's check your this. Let's check your that. How are you feeling? Is there anything you want to talk about? Do you feel safe at home?
Right.
I remember the first time a nurse asked me that years after all of this. And I was like, I'm sorry, what? And she goes, well, we ask people that. And I went, Jesus, I wish somebody would ask that back in the 1990s, right? Like,
yeah.
I'm so glad you are asking people that.
Yeah.
I wish somebody would ask me that back in the 90s because I probably would have said, hell no, I don't.
Yeah.
But back then there wasn't the support. There wasn't the signs in the bathroom. So I will say that the support system I had was actually Samantha, right?
Yeah.
She was the one that I said, no, I can't let this happen.
Mm-hmm.
I can't let her grow up thinking this is okay. I can't have her live in this.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I finally told my parents. And mm-hmm. my mom and dad didn't have a clue. They did not know. And they're like, why didn't you tell us? And I said, because. Like, abuse is something that lower poverty people go through, or
so many misconceptions,
right? So many misconceptions. Abuse is something that, you know, those people deal with,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Not, I mean, I was college educated. I had a good job. He was college educated. Since then, it's come out so much that it happens to
anybody.
Yeah.
Yes.
Including to men.
Yeah.
Right?
Of course.
So once I told my mom and dad, though, I will say that my mom told her parents.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandpa and grandma shocked me. You know, they came from the baby boomers, right?
Yeah.
And they stuck together no matter what. And yeah. I will say that, you know, my mom's parents had their challenges too. And quite frankly, I would love to go back and ask my grandmother, how did you stay with him?
Right.
But you stuck together.
Yeah.
So I thought that they would be like, Martha, you make it work.
Yeah.
Instead, they wrote me a letter and sent me money. And they said, no matter what you need, no matter what, you do what's best for you and we'll support you. And I just cried.
That's awesome.
I didn't think that they would say that, right?
Yeah.
And they did support me. So, I mean, like when something had to be fixed with the house, my grandpa would come down. They lived about maybe 2.5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Or my mom and dad were so, so helpful once everything happened.
Mm-hmm.
I only lived in that house, though, for a couple of months because his mother passed away a couple of weeks after.
Uh-huh.
And he basically became the landlord of the house. And so he would come in the middle of the night and bang on the doors and the windows and just torture. Anyway, so I only lived in that house for a couple more months. And then I moved into an apartment so that he didn't really know exactly where we were.
Yeah.
But they were really supportive. And then once I moved into that apartment, though, I realized I don't have enough money.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to, like, I was about $200 short a month.
Okay.
Between daycare and rent and the car payment mm-hmm. and all this shit, right? And so you think, I mean, we had a brand new Jeep. So I'm like, you know what? I'll just sell the Jeep. Well, it's not worth what we still owe on it. So even though I sold the damn Jeep, I still had a $600 a month car payment to pay off this fucking brand new Jeep.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to social services and said, you know, I'm really only short $150, $200 a month. Is there food stamps or is there something where you could pay the electric bills or whatever it might be? And she goes, no, you make too much money. And I'm like, how do I make too much money at $25,000 a year?
Right.
That's insane. And she said, well, the value of your car, which I'd already gotten rid of the Jeep and had this piece of shit, red Chrysler LeBaron convertible. Samantha and I had a great time in that car, but it was a piece
for
of shit,
sure, yeah.
right? But apparently it was worth $3,000. So she's like, mm-hmm. if you sold the car, then we could help you. And I go, if I sell my car, I won't be able to get to work. And she goes, oh, well, then in that case, we'll pay for everything. And I was like, this system is fucked up.
Yeah.
So my mom was telling my aunt and uncle about it. Mm-hmm. And my aunt and uncle sent me $500 a month for about 2 years.
Wow.
They bought Samantha a day bed. They bought Samantha a dresser. I got a bed and end table and all that stuff from the hotel I worked at. We were remodeling, and so the GM was like, we're just gonna throw this stuff away. You can take what you need. And so the support system was there when I finally
got out of it
and was brave enough to say, I need help.
Yeah.
But it takes a lot, especially for a stubborn, independent person like me who doesn't want to say I need help. But once I said I needed help, the help came.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much more help now, though.
Yeah, it's so important to have help. And that sounds like they were really there for you.
They were.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So in all of this mess, were you ever afraid that he was going to hurt Samantha?
No, I never was. And that was a mistake.
Do you think that led you to stay longer than you should have?
You want to know what led me to stay longer than I should have was that I said for better or worse in a church in front of God. And it was a pastor who told me, God didn't mean that, Martha. God didn't mean for you to live through this.
Mm-hmm.
Your husband's already broken all those marital vows. So therefore, you're not tied to any of that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I was really, really strong in my faith back then that, nope, God wouldn't do this. There must be a purpose. There must be a whatever. And so it was the pastor who said, no, God doesn't mean this for worse.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what made me stay longer and longer. But you asked about, was I ever worried about Samantha? And I never was, because I didn't think he would hurt her. But then after he finally left and after his mother passed away, and I told you he would come over in the middle of the night and bang on the doors and the windows, and just Samantha and I would be terrified and hiding in a closet. I never thought about letting the daycare know that we were separated and that I didn't want him to pick her up. But legally, he had the rights to pick her up. But he showed up one day, picked her up, and then called me on the phone that he had picked up Samantha and that he was going to kill himself and her. And for 2 hours, he drove around in a car saying that he was going to get on Interstate 90 the wrong way and do a head-on collision, or drive into a brick wall or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so for 2 hours, so I worked about 30 minutes from home. And so I left work and jumped in the car and had him on my cell phone the whole time, trying to get back to where we lived, trying to coerce him to give her back.
That must have been so
terrifying. It was terrifying. Yeah. It was absolutely terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I got her back. And then I got a restraining order.
Mm-hmm.
And then he disappeared for like a year and a half. He took what I call a sabbatical, and it was the best year and a half ever. But then we still weren't divorced. We were going through divorce the whole time. Every time we'd have a court order or a court date, he just wouldn't show up, or he'd get a new lawyer, or he would do whatever he could to not show up and delay and delay and delay. Well, eventually, a year and a half later, he shows up because I got served paperwork that he wanted full custody of her.
Wow.
And his argument to the judge was that he's now engaged to an 18-year-old, and he's now 28.
God.
And that he can provide a real family, having a mom and a dad. And I was terrified again. Like, oh my God, what if he takes her? What if his name gets him what he wants?
Yeah.
Luckily, no. The judge, absolutely.
Yeah.
In fact, my lawyers told me not even to go in. Like, they had a little room for me, and I sat in this little meeting room, and I didn't even go in. Within 5 minutes, the fiance was being carried out of the courtroom, kicking and screaming and swearing that she's going to get our baby. She's going to get our baby, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, what in the hell is going on in there? And then a couple minutes later comes out and my lawyer's like, all right, you have full custody. He still has to pay child support. He does get some visitation, but you have full custody. You have full rights. The restraining order though was taken down and he does get visitation now, but he has no say in how you raise her, and you can leave the state whenever you want.
There you go, yeah.
So I felt great.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't going to leave the state at the moment. I mean, I could have, but I didn't have any money. And so he did have visitation. And one weekend she came back and she had a burn on her leg from a clothing iron. And I still have no idea. I mean, she didn't say somebody burnt me. She didn't whatever. She just goes, it was an accident, mommy. And I don't really know. But I worried every time.
Yeah, of course.
Every time.
Of course, yeah.
And then eventually they just stopped seeing her. Like, that only lasted like 2 months or so, or maybe 3 months. I don't know. It was so many years ago. It didn't last that long. Mm-hmm. But they would like keep her clothing. They'd keep her winter coat. They'd keep her teddy or blankie. They would do anything they could just to cause turmoil. And
or just to have a reason she would come back.
Correct. Yeah. 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 And then eventually they just stopped seeing her.
Yeah. So from this, how has your perspective on love and trust evolved? Yeah.
Trust? I'm still working on that.
Yeah, of course.
I still see a therapist.
Of course.
I used to see therapists off and on and off and on. After all of that, obviously I was in therapy a lot, and not with the therapist that he and I had, because he had completely convinced her that I was the issue. but I saw a therapist, and I thought I had done a really good job, but then I realized through life that I don't trust, and I don't trust people's actions. I don't trust what people say.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier to just be alone and take care of yourself.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely easier to assume the worst so you don't get hurt by what could possibly come from it.
Yep.
Yeah. How was picking your life back up after?
It was a struggle, but I did it.
You damn well did it.
I damn well did it.
Yeah.
He said to me one time, you will never survive without me.
I laugh at that.
Look at me now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I was like, right. You watch. Thank God he doesn't really watch. I mean, I have no contact with him. Samantha calls him a sperm donor.
Right.
She doesn't call him a dad. She hasn't seen him since she was 8.
Yeah.
My second husband adopted her, which is her dad.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I mean, I picked up my life and fixed it before my second husband came along too. I mean, within a year, I'd fixed my credit that he had ruined. I was able to buy a house. Luckily, both of my sisters at different times had moved in with me and were able to help me with Samantha. Until then, you know, and I worked my way up through my career and started making more money, and then I could move closer in to Chicago, and we had our own townhome and
mm-hmm.
our own thing, and mm-hmm. my sisters went on their way and led their lives, and
mm-hmm.
and then my second husband came into our lives when Samantha was about 6 or 7, I think.
Yeah. So since I've known you as this most badass, independent, resilient woman, and I couldn't even tell you before I knew the story of you and sperm donor. I couldn't have even told you that you grew up or lived something through this. And I think that your resilience and your confidence and your independence has really impacted your life and
very much
helped you grow into this person that you are now. What are some common misconceptions that you faced about domestic violence?
That it happened to other people.
Yeah.
Right?
It
wouldn't happen to me.
Right.
Like, I'm an intelligent, level-headed. I didn't come from an abusive family. Like, that doesn't happen to people like me.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why I think I mean, I was engaged to him for 3 years while going through abuse and still didn't think, hey, maybe I shouldn't do this.
Yeah.
But I was a different, like you say, you know this. This is who I've been the last how many years.
Yeah.
But that wasn't me in high school and in my 20s. Mm-hmm. The me then was quiet. I mean, I was there. But I didn't disrupt the status quo. I didn't, you know, I just sort of went along life.
Mm-hmm.
And did my thing.
Mm-hmm.
And life threw me into having to become who I am today, which I'm very proud of who I am today.
Totally.
I would not, people have asked, would you change that? Now that you know what you know, would you go back and change anything? And I wouldn't. For one thing, I wouldn't have Samantha.
Yep.
But I wouldn't be who I am today either.
Yeah.
There is still, though, sadly, this misconception that it happens to other people. There are so many educated, well-off, functioning people in the world that unfortunately deal with...
It can happen to anyone.
Abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens to men, too.
Yep, it does. I think that, you know, there needs to be more resources.
There does. And, you know, things have changed. There are a lot more resources than there were when in the 90s. But it's still hard for the abused victim to leave because of the manipulation and
yeah.
the gaslighting and the things that the abuser does to the abusee.
Yep.
They make you think nobody's going to believe you. They make you think that if you leave me, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah.
If you get to the right resources, the chance of that person killing you is slim. I won't say it won't happen because sadly we know it does.
Yeah.
Right? Sadly, the law does work in our favor a lot, but it also works in their favor and they have rights. And so unless we have proof, we can't get a restraining order or we can't, you know, and he never left proof.
Mm-hmm.
So you need proof for things.
Yeah.
But there are domestic abuse shelters. There are places you can go that help you stay hidden for a while until you can get stuff figured out.
Mm.
But in some cases, the abusee just feels, I'm better with the devil I know kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
I know how to work this. I know how to handle this. I know how that person's patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
Yeah. So how can friends and family better support someone if they're going through something like that?
First, I would say notice. Pay attention.
Pay attention.
Pay
yeah.
attention. There is always some little sign. There is always some little thing.
Mm-hmm.
Follow your gut, because your gut is probably telling you something's going on with this person.
Mm-hmm.
But follow the signs and then ask. Don't be afraid to ask. Is everything...
Even their response could say everything.
Yep. Had somebody asked me, I probably would have said something.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What message do you want to convey to others who might be in similar situations?
That you can get out.
It's not impossible.
It's not.
It's not the end.
It's not. It's not, and it's going to take work, but there are so many more resources now to help.
Mm.
To not be afraid to get out.
Mm-hmm.
And listen to your gut, listen to your instincts. All there's so many stories of, I thought he would change, or I thought I could change him, or
yeah.
I thought it won't.
And you can't. Yeah.
I don't know, I will say this, my abusive husband, I won't use his name, but is on his fifth marriage.
Mm.
I know that only because a college friend is still connected to him. His second wife, the one who was the 18-year-old, and
right.
She reached out to me many years ago, and he did the exact same thing to her. She left him.
Mm-hmm.
She got remarried and he adopted her daughter as well. So if he did it with me and he did it with her, he sure as hell, I'm sure, did it with those other wives. And God help the fifth one that is with him now. And Samantha wanted to get in touch with her and tell her. And I said, well, according to what I see and hear, they've been together for a year and a half. She already knows.
Yep. 100%. I don't think that anything would change.
Samantha or I get in touch with her wouldn't matter.
Yep.
Plus, if we did, it would mean he would know where we are. And I don't want that.
Hell no.
And neither does Samantha. So. But you can get out. That's my message. You can. I don't care what. I don't care how violent. I don't care what this person has threatened you with. You can get out. And you need to get out.
You need to, yeah. Besides what we've already spoken on, how has this led you to the person that you are today and the person your daughter is today?
She's me on steroids.
Totally.
You know, there's good and bad, right? Uh-huh. Like, I am strong, independent, can take care of myself, have worked my way up my career, I have my master's, I've raised two kids,
resilient.
Right? My car is paid for, I own my own house, well, the bank owns the house, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I mean, I am not afraid anymore of really anything.
Yeah.
Except, right, the opposite side of that is trust is hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, trusting people is hard. And I'm actually working on that now with my therapist, is that I have to learn to trust people. I need to learn to be able to allow myself to depend on other people. Because it's okay.
It is. Yeah.
But that's hard when you've been in that situation. And I will say the same. I mean, I raised Samantha to, you need to be able to rely on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I hope to hell you find a great husband, which she has.
Mm-hmm.
And she absolutely can rely on him. But if you don't find a great husband or a great partner, you got to be able to take care of yourself. And that girl could absolutely take care of herself. The funny thing is, with my second child, my son, I didn't raise him that way because I didn't have to, right? I had my second husband that was there and we didn't have those issues. And it's funny because I'm the same mom, but I raised two kids to be a little bit different, which is interesting. But, I mean, obviously he can take care of himself just fine too, since 100%. He's now a Marine. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that I raised her to be, you know what, you need to be able to just take care of yourself.
Yeah. Were you ever scared or worried that she would possibly end up in a similar situation?
Yeah, because statistics say that they do. So I was worried, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think that she would have ended up like that had I not left that relationship. Had I let her think that living like that was normal, then I do think, yes, that she'd have ended up, and she'd be a very different person. I did. Because statistics say I'm supposed to end up in another one. Thank God I didn't.
Right.
Now, my second marriage ended, unfortunately, as well, because of trust issues. But, yeah, there's always that.
Yeah.
Worry and fear in the back of my mind.
Well, she has an amazing husband.
She does.
You know, your son has a great relationship, so.
Yep.
Awesome. Can you share any coping strategies that helped you during those difficult times or afterwards?
Good and bad coping?
Good and bad coping.
Yeah, I will say that, I mean, I ended up probably drinking more than I should from time to time. When I first left him and moved into the apartment, no, because, I mean, she was like, at that point, she was almost two.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's not like you can drink yourself to oblivion with a two-year-old, right?
Yeah.
But there were times that I'm like, I just can't deal with this. I'm going to have another glass of wine, or I'm going to have another glass of something.
Mm-hmm.
That's a bad coping mechanism, right?
Yeah.
Therapy was really the best way to deal with it. I threw myself into work. whether that be good or bad.
Keeping yourself busy.
Keeping myself busy, yeah.
Not letting...
Yep. Samantha and I had a lot of little outings. Mm-hmm. You know, cheap, free outings.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. I thought I was the worst mother in the world. Right, because... At night, it was either, okay, do we want Lucky Charms, or do we want macaroni and cheese, or do we want hot dogs, or do we want scrambled eggs? Because that's what I could afford.
That sounds, like, amazing.
Yes, Samantha thought it was great. I didn't know she thought it was great. In fact, she wrote about it for a senior paper that it was like, and we would dance around the living room to the song of Friends and just do all sorts of fun stuff.
Yeah.
And every 2 weeks on the day, on the week I got paid, we would go to Baker Square. And we would order the soup, sandwich, pie combo. And of course, we would eat the pie first. And then we would share the soup and share the sandwich. Mm-hmm. And again, I was like, oh my God, you can't even afford two meals, Martha. What the hell is the matter with you? She, again, thought it was the greatest time of her life.
Yeah.
So I guess it's just find the little things mm-hmm. that you can do to help show them.
Mm-hmm.
That you love them, that you're there for them, and that's part of coping too.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
How is balancing, you know, raising a child and working and trying to keep up with the bills and all of that?
Hard. It's really hard. If it wasn't for my aunt and uncle sending me that money every month, I probably would have ended up moving back to my small little town in Minnesota, living with my mom and dad, and who knows what I'd be doing, right?
Yeah.
Not that there's anything wrong with living in a nice little small town and with your parents, right? But that's not, like, my generation was taught you get done with high school, you move out, and you move on, right? And it wasn't said to me, but it was just expected. You're going to graduate high school, you're going to go to college, you're going to get married, you're going to have kids, and this is your life. That is what is expected of you. Mm-hmm. It was never said, here's what we expect of you. But it was little things like my grandma would say, have you found a man yet? Or it was just the little things, right? And my mom and dad were always like, what college are we looking at? Like, it wasn't a choice, right? There was no option. You were going to college, period. So there's little things, right? But it wasn't expected that you then move home. Like, now it's... not at all a big deal. Back then, it would have been, you failed. If I'd have moved back to home, it would have been, you failed. That's mm-hmm. not the way people look at things now, but back then it was.
Mm-hmm.
Had I not had my aunt and uncle to help, that probably is what would have happened. Now, what did happen is they did help. I still pinched pennies and
mm-hmm.
made sure we tight. I worked my way up my career so I would make more money. But if I didn't have my sisters, who at different times lived with me to basically help me raise Samantha,
mm-hmm.
because I went into the restaurant side, and the restaurant side of the hospitality world takes all kinds of crazy hours.
Yeah.
So luckily they were there to help with Samantha. But also, if it wasn't for my mom and dad, because after I got out of the restaurant world and went into the hotel world down the sales side, mm-hmm. and then travel is involved, I mean, my mom and dad were retired and they would come down and stay with Samantha when I would travel. If it wasn't for that support system, things would be different, right? I'm not saying I would have failed, but things would be different. My path would have been different. Luckily, I had my sisters and my mom and dad to help, and I had my aunt and uncle who could help with some money. And then as soon as I was no longer needed the money, I wanted to pay them back, and they said, nope, just pay it forward.
Yeah.
And so I've done that from time to time when I've seen a single mom who needed help, and I would just
pay it forward.
Quietly pay it forward.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. What advice would you give to young girls who may, like, aren't in relationships or, you know, looking to be in a relationship that would help them?
Yeah. I still think there's a huge stigmatism against abuse.
Yeah.
Right? Even though there's been so much done about it, and you doing this podcast will help get that out there too. There's so much talked about it but there's still this horrible stigmatism of how did it happen to me kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Don't hide it. Don't hide it. Say something. Tell anyone. Tell a fucking stranger in the Walmart bathroom if you have to, right? Tell the cashier. Tell your mom. Tell anybody.
Yeah.
and get out of it, because mm-hmm. I will guarantee you the statistics are that that person is not going to change. Not.
100%.
No matter how much you think you are fabulous and that you'll get them to change and love will get them to change, it's all bullshit. Whatever it is that predispositions a person to be like this, and there are some studies on how people have gotten like that, you cannot get them to change. So mm-hmm. do not stay in that relationship, period.
Yeah.
At all.
I think it's so stigmatized. People think it's embarrassing
yep.
that it's happening to them.
Yep.
I think the script needs to be flipped to
yep.
you're so brave that you are speaking out and you're getting
yep.
out of it.
Yep. Yep.
It's not embarrassing or all of the negative.
No. You know, that book, It Ends With Us.
Yeah.
And then it's a movie now and yep. what's Blake?
Blake Lively. Lively. Mm-hmm.
So I haven't I read the book.
Mm-hmm.
I have not seen the movie. But what I have seen and heard is that she downplayed part of it. Now, I don't know if that's true or
not. I have seen right? some of the media coverage, yeah.
That makes me sad. She had an opportunity to blow it out of the water.
Mm-hmm.
She had an opportunity to take this and say, I'm going to take this cause and I'm going to fucking roll with it and yep. scream it from the rooftops. And she didn't.
She didn't. Yeah.
And I would say also to anyone who's in that situation, whether it's starting or you're still in it, to get the help you need. It's a long path. I mean, I'm mm-hmm. still dealing with it. And it's, well, my daughter's 30. So 30 years later, I thought it was perfectly good. And it was a couple of months ago, a friend of mine from college sent me a Facebook friend request. And I hadn't seen this friend in, well, since she, yeah. her husband was one of our groomsmen.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh my God, it's so good to see her, right? And so I click accept. And about 10 minutes later, I went, oh shit, wait, hold on. I wonder if her husband and my ex are still friends. And yeah. they are. And I freaked. Oh my goodness. I literally had a panic attack in the car.
Uh-huh.
I had to pull over and... Well, I had it pulled over so I could check and see if they were friends. But I'm sitting there and I had to call my daughter, who luckily is a psych nurse. And I'm like, mm-hmm. I need you to help me here. And so she walked me through a visualization path
mm-hmm.
so that I could calm down. But I was freaking out, panic attack. Like
naturally.
30 yeah. years later, I still don't want that man to see me. I don't want him to find me. I don't want him to know a damn thing about mm-hmm. me. And that scared me.
Mm.
Because I'm like, hold on.
Why is she trying to?
Well, no, what scared me was, why did I let that affect me like that when I'm mm-hmm. such a stronger person right now?
Mm-hmm.
And I know damn well if I were to run into him and he were to start any shit, he'd be done in a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
But why did I let that freak me like that? And that's what scared me. And so I've been working on that in therapy. But mm-hmm. get yeah, out natural. And... get help.
Mm-hmm. You know, as we wrap up today's conversation, I want to thank you, Miss Martha, for sharing your story and your insights. It takes immense courage to speak out, and by doing so, you're helping to break the silence around domestic violence. For our listeners, remember that you are not alone and there are resources available to help, and we'll put some in the caption of this video. Thank you for joining us today, and let's continue to raise awareness and foster understanding in our communities. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye.